Yes, indeed.
It couldn't hold up to the standard. So, until then. Too funny. Welcome, everybody, to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day. Our technology is just having an interesting day. That was kind of a ghost song. It came out of nowhere. That was weird. But that's all right. That's what internet radio is all about. So let's get to our guest, because I think she is going to blow some people away today. So, Betsy, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Oh, thanks, Brian.
So, if you would, please, and just for everybody, Betsy's got a little bit of cough. She is high as a kite on cough medication at the moment. So, God only knows what secrets we can pry out of her. But circle of trust between us and all of our listeners. It's all good. So if there's some coughing, intermittent coughing, everybody just sort of has to deal with it. So there we go. So if you would, introduce yourself to our lovely family of listeners, and then we'll kind of roll into what keeps you up at night, other than coughing.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, thanks so much. And thanks for playing the intro of The Cure. I thought that was very appropriate. I understood that reference, so that I will be able to make it through the next 30 minutes. So my background is in recruiting. I am the founder of a startup called The Good Job, which we started a couple of years ago, and we help companies to leverage their cultures as a way to attract talent. And before that, I had been in recruitment process outsourcing and worked on lots of large projects where employers would talk about, you know, how they're great employers and, you know, try to attract job seekers based on what they offer. And a lot of times we felt that what was missing was their story and why they're a great employer. So The Good Jobs really came from this need in the market to tell a story better for an employer of any size, large, small, medium companies who usually don't lead with how they're unique as an employer, what they invest in their employees.
Well, that is, I love startups. I just have an absolute ridiculous love affair with people that have gigantic sets of brass to go start things up. So kick ass for you.
Thanks.
And God help you. God of your understanding. I don't want any hate mail. So whatever you call it. So what's top of mind for you? Kind of let's go in your world. And you know, you woke up this morning, and you know, again, a little bit high. Small medication, which is all altered consciousness. Nothing wrong with that.
Right.
What's top of mind with you?
Well, I think what's top of mind for any startup is we're educating the market and we're telling companies who have who are struggling to attract talent. We're just starting to see where there's some major skill gaps. I'm actually in the Midwest. I'm in Milwaukee. So I don't know that the employers in the Midwest have felt the pinch as much as the coast. But what keeps me up at night is trying to really help companies to understand the need to start investing in employment brand. A lot of companies think that employment brand is sort of an initiative that happens outside of their world, and they sort of put it on their budget, and regardless of whether a company invests in a set employment brand. Everyone has a brand. So what we try to do is help companies to leverage their brand and, you know, whatever they invest in, whether it be a lot of training and development or ping pong tables and dogs at work, companies are really differentiating themselves. And but they're doing it, you know, sort of internally, and that's why referrals are still so successful, because a person who loves the company they work for is going to tell everyone they know, you know, come and apply at this company. Unfortunately, for smaller companies especially, this is true. A lot of that information really lives within their walls, and it doesn't make it out to the public, you know, in a corporate career site or something like that. So we see a lot of small and medium-sized companies that still say, we're looking for great talent, you know, we're happy employees, inquire within. And, you know, as a job seeker, I'm saying, why? You know, what is compelling about that? So what the Good Jobs, you know, whole aim is, and what we hope to be able to bring to small and medium-sized companies, is this idea that transparency about their culture will help them to attract not only, you know, a workforce that will be retained longer because they'll be a better productive employee, but also just be really excited to apply and, you know, jump through all the hurdles that usually are, you know, cumbersome for job seekers to stick through sometimes a 6, 8, 10 week hiring process. So that's what we're all about.
Well, that's great. And if you're once you talked about this employer brand and how that is relevant for the, especially an organization to attract talent, if you can tell, let's just say, some of the four key elements for building a strong employer brand, what would that be?
Well, I would say the first for sure would be just being transparent and recognizing what you as an organization invest in. The second would be probably to leverage the referrals that you have within your organization, and, you know, see what they like about your culture and your company, what keeps them, you know, wanting to be productive. And this is where my cold medicine is going to kick in.
awesome.
3 and 4. right. Yeah, let's leave it at that. Let's move on to the next question.
Okay, that's cool. No problem with that. So, Betsy, you have been working with so many clients and helping them build their brand. So have you ever faced with or a situation like the client has a problem handling, you know, misperception of their brand?
Sure. Yeah, and that's definitely something that a lot of companies are struggling with. Anytime, you know, an employee leaves dissatisfied, you know, writes a terrible review about the company, companies really struggle with that kind of feedback. So what the Good Jobs really focuses on is how companies invest. And, you know, we're not about employee venting. We're not about, you know, sort of spinning it back. We're really about talking to prospects and job seekers about what that company invests in. So I would say, you know, all companies have at given, you know, different times have had received poor feedback. But what's interesting is, you know, we started an engagement this past fall with Zappos, and one of the questions that we asked ourselves is, you know, with a company that has such a strong employment brand and such a strong culture and really, you know, has led with their culture, how can we move the needle for them? What can we do to help them? And in Zappos' core values, one of the things they talk about is being humble. And they said to us, you know, even though we know we invest in our culture, we know that not every single job seeker could possibly know what our value proposition is. So, you know, for the job seekers that want to know what they invest in, this is a really a valuable tool to be able to communicate that. So, you know, for every company, whether they have a shining, great culture and brand and lead with it, or, you know, a tarnished brand and they're struggling against it, you know, transparency in the ways that they invest in their culture is the way through that.
That's great. So how do they fix that kind of a situation if, let's just say, for example, Zappos, great world culture, bigger brands, a bigger company. But if you ask me, you know, a medium-sized company, how do they fix this sort of issues and move forward?
You know, I think, again, you know, what our service is all about is helping companies to be more transparent and really leading with how they want to be seen. So we're not really in the business of getting into the personal politics of you know, how people are managed, or we don't do anything on the talent management side. But what we feel that there's a huge gap where job seekers who, you know, sort of look at a job posting, and, you know, job postings are all about the qualifications and knocking out candidates, and what the employers have forgotten about, and I think, you know, it's just been a kind of a one-sided selection process, being the employers sort of setting a scenario where these are all the minimum qualifications that a job seeker must have to be considered. What's missing is this, you know, what's in it for the candidate. So what we really help companies to do is to lead with, you know, we have great sustainability practices, or we have dogs at work, or, you know, we have health insurance on day one. All companies invest in different ways, but what is missing, we feel, is that that information usually doesn't get to a candidate until, you know, often the face-to-face interview, where they kind of, you know, go, you know, hands-on, really, you know, try to close the deal with that candidate. Well, you know, obviously, you know, 80-90% of the funnel has fallen out at that point. And a lot of the funnel has fallen out because of the selection process. But what, you know, what we want to do is help employers at the very top of the funnel to attract a higher caliber of candidate, so that that person at the bottom of the funnel, you know, really understands the value proposition and hung in there through the hiring process.
That's great. So there is one this controversial, yet most discussed topic that has come up, competency versus culture fit. So if you're gonna let us say, advise your clients, what would they focus on? Would they focus on competency of a candidate or culture fit of a candidate? What would you choose first?
Well, seeing as how we're all about culture fit, I have to say, you know, culture fit is something that, you know, that I would probably really focus on. However, I mean, I think it's sort of like it's not an either-or scenario. I think that for so long, because job postings have been focused on competency and 100% focused on skill fit, culture fit has been, you know, completely neglected. So I think that, you know, by focusing on culture fit, and, you know, Tony Hsieh of Zappos talks about how I saw him speak last year, and he told a story about, you know, the last company that he started. He said he sold it, and part of the reason he sold that business was because he didn't like coming to work every day. And he said that he you know, the company was set up and they were hiring talent based on competency and skill fit, and ultimately it was a company that he didn't like going to. And so, you know, when he started Zappos or joined Zappos, he was very mindful of that culture fit piece, and that a lot of things that can be taught from a skill perspective, you know, can come in later. But that culture fit, once, you know, you've hired a lot of people and the culture is kind of off and running, it's very difficult to change it. And a lot of companies are set up for, you know, growth at any cost, and they're not very fun places to work. And unfortunately, that kind of culture is very difficult to change. So I would say, for sure, competency has to be, you know, top of mind, and very specific skill sets have to be met. But I think that culture piece is also something that must be part of the process, and it can't only be, you know, at the very end of the process as an assessment or a knockout.
Cool. to your question of, I mean, to your point of change and corporate culture, does an organization's culture change when its leadership changes? What do you think?
Certainly, that definitely will impact. I think it depends on the size of the organization. I think that, you know, culture is, it's kind of a squishy word. And, you know, I've worked at companies that said, we have a great learning culture, we have a mm-hmm. fun culture. And I think it's very difficult for organizations to describe what they mean by that. You know, a learning culture, I've worked at an organization that they gave stipends for everybody in the company to go to the conferences that they felt were, you know, were good development for them, for their careers. And I think getting around culture, that word, the only way that I can think to do that is to sort of quantify culture in a meaningful way. And I definitely think that when leadership changes, it's going to be impacted, but it's mostly impacted based on, you know, the new policies that are brought in and, you know, how they decide to invest or not invest in their employees.
So, Betsy, what's your definition of innovation? When you hear that word, what comes to mind? Let's break it down.
It's a great question. So, you know, in the startup world, innovation is creating something that hasn't existed. You know, one of the challenges we have as a startup is that, you know, a lot of innovation in the last 10 years, especially in recruiting, has been around selection and figuring out, you know, how to get to more candidates quickly, resume parsing. There's been a lot of innovation around that. And that's been great for for automating the recruiting process. But what hasn't happened in the last 10 years is innovation around candidate experience, and really, I think, you know, sharing what is important to a candidate to understand if they're a good fit for an organization. So I would say, you know, innovation. It's interesting because I've talked to companies over the last year. We launched thegoodjobs.com in January of 2013, and there's a very strong desire to be innovative, kind of, you know, to your point, Brian, earlier, like, oh, I love startups. They're awesome and sexy and cool, and there's a real real excitement around startups. But it's interesting because the flip side of the excitement is it's also really scary. Change is scary. And so I think innovation is great, and it you know, it sort of has to fulfill a need. You know, I guess it really, you know, has to answer a pain point for companies to think that they want to invest in innovation. You know, that's one of the things. And in my background, I worked for Pinstripe, which is the recruitment process outsourcing company, and it was right at the beginning of recruitment process outsourcing, and it was really scary, and there was a lot of education around what outsourcing is and why you do it, and you know, with the Good Jobs, it's the same scenario today where we're creating this kind of brand new way to describe culture, and companies, I talk to companies every day that are really excited about it and think it's cool and innovative, and then there's something that's a little scary, and only, you know, only the brave step forward. And since launching last January, we have about 50 companies that have joined us so far, and you know, obviously we're looking for more. But I think innovation is it can be really scary for organizations. And I would say even especially in the HR recruiting group that, you know, not always the most innovative of the company. So I think, you know, we're looking for, you know, the companies that are investing in their culture and want to be seen as innovative.
So I think I heard you use the word brave, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is, so two parts of the question. So what's kind of defined for you as an entrepreneur and as a business owner, what brave looks like, and then you as an individual, like in your career, what are points that you're like, okay, I've got to be fucking brave today because this is
right.
Like a defining moment, and I've just got to do it. Is there anything that comes to mind with you on that?
Brave. I think everything that is new and, you know, being asked to get outside our comfort zone, you know, being on a radio show, speaking at a conference, you know, I think every part of being alive for me is, you know, what do I want my life to be? What's important? You know, having a startup business for me is an exciting way to push myself, and it's different than having a job. And it also means, you know, the world of the startup means, you know, I might be a millionaire in 3 years and I might not have a paycheck in 3 months. That's the way that that scenario goes. And, you know, there's a lot of comfort to having a job. I had a job for a long time before I had a startup. And so I think, but I've definitely had a lot of training in my career and the choices I've made because I've always taken jobs that I've worked for other startups. This is my first startup, but I really enjoy creating a market. I think it's really fun to talk to people about something that is new. So I've always, in my life, in my professional life, my personal life, I've always made choices that were definitely, you know, there's sort of the option A, safety, and option B, not safety, and I pretty much always go for option B. yeah.
Well, Sam, and thank you for sharing that, because I think those are things that, I don't know if it's sometimes I guess I hear things because I'm more open to hear them. They've always been there, but I've got the pleasure of working and going and spending two days with 6,000 K-12 students with a friend of mine, Angela Myers, doing an exercise called Choose to Matter, and it's really about kind of thinking through innovation and working with kids around, one, the message is everybody matters, and helping them find their voice to solve problems and solutions and create solutions. And it was incredibly powerful. But there was a lot of brave and courageous things that I couldn't even imagine doing as an elementary student, and getting up and speaking and like creating thoughts and presenting, much less in front of your peers as a teenager, right? So there was a lot of really brave things that kids did. And so that's the reason I asked the question. I'm just curious, from your perspective, entrepreneurs got to be little, you know, they've definitely got to have a brave gene, because it gets really lonely at times. Even if it's for a minute, sometimes it gets really, really lonely when you're running your own show. And so you just got to make sure, obviously, you have mechanisms. This goes for career too. You're probably never alone unless you quit talking to people and quit asking questions, right?
Right.
We put ourselves in those silos. And a lot of times, I mean, it's usually self-inflicted. And because very few times it's like there is nobody. You got to create somebody at times, right? Whether it's, you know, whether it's somebody you don't even know, you can just unload on and say, here all it is, and what do you think? And, you know, it doesn't matter. We're as human, so typically you're never alone, depending on how you approach that. So anyway, inspiration, probably my last question. We're almost out of time. I told you it would go quick and be fun.
Yeah.
So that was very enthusiastic, by the way.
my cold meds are kicking in again.
Yes, that's what I. That helps the curve. Where do you draw your inspiration from?
Okay, good question. Well, I guess back to your other point of never being alone. I mean, I have to say, having a really strong partner, when our inspiration is running low in the gas tank and it's hard, I think I draw inspiration from my partner for sure. I always say that, our site looks beautiful. I'm sort of a design-minded person, so I take all the credit for that, but the reason it actually got done is because of her. So I think that I draw a lot of inspiration from my business partner, Ann Nimke. And, there are so many inspiring people in the world, and I really get a lot from reading other people's blogs and what people are sharing and what they're doing. We were really fortunate. I'm located in Milwaukee, and we were really fortunate to go through a business accelerator here in Wisconsin called Generator. And, talking about it's really lonely and it's really hard, they have been fantastic at giving us support, not only from, seed funding and the sort of necessary funding part, the dollar part, but also going in their office and saying, wow, what you're doing is really hard. It's not easy to create something from nothing. And there's no processes. There's, every single day, what do you want to do today? What will maximize your time and get the biggest impact for your efforts? So I would have to say, I get a lot of inspiration from other entrepreneurs in that startup world and supporting what they're doing and marveling at what they're creating out of nothing. It's a very inspiring group to be a part of.
Well, fantastic. That is, excellent, excellent, excellent to share and hear. Because again, it comes back to just all that are listening and all that will listen is you never have to be alone. That's the thing is at times we convince ourselves of that, definitely guilty. But you know what? The beauty is amazing people. I had two or three conversations this morning that just are like, I'm lucky that I've got people like that to rap with a little bit about what's going on, right? And it's awesome. It gets you kind of fired up for all the stuff. So,
yep.
Well, guess what, Betsy? Tell us where folks can connect with you. And
sure.
After that, we're out of time.
Okay. So people can connect with me at thegoodjobs.com, and that's plural, thegoodjobs.com. My email address is betsy@thegoodjobs.com, and it's B-E-T-S-Y, like Betsy Ross. And I'd love to connect with anyone out there who would like to talk about their culture and help job seekers to understand it and leverage it better to attract talent.
Well, that is perfect. Well, thanks again for kind of sharing some insight on that. And definitely hope that you get to feeling better, folks. We are out of here. Thanks for tuning in.
A German beer with a Cuban cigar in the middle of Paris with a Dominican bar. Great head on her shoulder, she probably studied abroad. She transferred to Harvard from King's College in Marta. She says that I'm her favorite cause she admires the art. Michelangelo with the flow, Picasso with the bar. Well put together like a piece by Gerson.